Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Brandon Marshall, Kevin Wild. Oh, we've got a fun show today, but Nick, I got to start by asking you, do the Clippers have it in them?
What a night.
Do they have more rally in them?
Brutal.
Oh, at the risk of getting another angry phone call from my buddy Ty Lue, I think it might be over in Utah, Jenna. I think the Clippers are in real trouble.
Don't tell Brandon that. Do not tell Brandon. We'll get to that in a second. We got to start in Milwaukee, though. This game, Nets, Bucks, game three. We talked about how big this was for Giannis, who was obviously watching us talk about it yesterday, because who isn't watching us? Giannis turned in a 33-point performance, just enough to eke out the win and beat Brooklyn in game three. But the story in this one, the final seconds of the game, Bruce Brown, in for James Harden, had a go-ahead layup that just missed here. Could have passed to KD. Could have passed to Kyrie. He's like, nah, I got this, guys. He didn't, in fact, have this. Lost the game. Here's Steve Nash on that possession.
Well, we all know that we want Kevin and Kai to shoot the ball, but if they don't get free, you know, they got to make the right play. So we made the right play. you know, you give some credit to the Bucks, and you know, still we got some makeable looks. We can get better at executing. We can get better at handling those moments. And it was a great test for us tonight. And I think there's a lot for us to learn from.
Yeah, we have a few end-of-game plays that we like to practice and run through. We had an opportunity to execute, and we failed to do so. So ended up in Bruce's hands with a contested layup. You know, usually Bruce puts us in a great position to at least have something at the rim that goes in, but tonight just didn't go for us. So it's not on him. It's not on any one person. Just got to execute. They really were physical down the stretch and made it tough. So you got to give him credit.
I don't know. Might be on him. I mean, Nick, what'd you make of Bruce Brown? Could have gone to KD. Could have gone to Kyrie. Some would say two pretty good shooters. Game three on the line. He takes it himself. What'd you make of it?
Well, no, it's not on Bruce Brown. And I don't blame Bruce Brown for having confidence there. Remember, before the season, on I think the ETC's podcast, Kyrie Irving said, it's great to finally have on my side a guy who can make those shots. And he was obviously talking about Bruce Brown. Oh, he was talking about Kevin Durant? Oh, so why didn't Durant get the ball? I don't know why Durant didn't get the ball, but let's look at that play again. Because Durant, after a rough 2.5 quarters to start the game, was spectacular late. He was the only guy late who seemed to be playing with any confidence and legs. Kyrie Irving, once again, was exhausted at the end of this game, which we can talk more about later. So if you were like me and you had bet on the Bucks, you were rooting for the Bucks, the one thing you didn't want was the ball in Kevin Durant's hands, which is why it was so nice. That's Kevin Durant in the far corner. Just standing there. That's why it's so nice. Kevin Durant never flashed for the ball, never went and demanded to go get it, never was a part of the play. He took himself out of it, which helped the Bucks immeasurably. Right now, if you do a Twitter search for best player in the world, all you are going to get is people declaring Kevin Durant has officially, finally become the best player in the world. If that is true, he must be held to the best player in the world standard, which is not, you must take the final shot, but you gotta be a part of the possession. You gotta at least be in the action. And the possession before, by the way, KD was out floating at the three-point line, not touching the ball, which was another Bruce Brown miss. So this was a very interesting game for a million different reasons, Brandon, but you obviously were rooting for the Nets. Right. I was rooting for the Bucks. You definitely wanted the ball in Kevin Durant's hands. I desperately wanted the ball not in Kevin Durant's hands, and it didn't end up in his hands.
Right.
And part of that is because he's just standing there. So, yeah, Bruce had a bad shot, but KD didn't help him out there on that last possession.
Listen, I feel like this is a unwritten rule, like cardinal sin in the NBA.
The game's on the line. You have to figure it out. Look, they had this. They had this last play with 11 seconds left in the game. It was a terrible inbounds pass. About time they picked it up, Bruce had 8 seconds left on the clock. So it couldn't have been one of those things where he thought he didn't have enough time to figure out how to get it to Kyrie, how to get it to KD. He had it and he took it. And he tried to go over Lopez. Come on, you can't go over Brooke Lopez. Yeah. Lopez is 10 feet tall. Here's the deal. Yeah, you're right. KD have to figure out a way. You know, but at the end of the day, if you're KD, you got to be happy with the way your guys played. Bruce Brown is one of the reasons why they got here. So you give them the benefit of the doubt, but just look at them and say, hey, bro, you got to figure out how to get me the ball. You had 8 seconds left on that clock. Right. There was more than enough time. So here's the deal. Moving forward, you'll see a better Nets team. They were flat that entire game. I mean, both sides of the court, you know, and both teams, super flat. And it was a terrible game to watch. It wasn't fun. It was boring. And then there was moments where you saw Chris Middleton step up and try to take over the game. And then, like you said, KD took over the game for a little spurt there. That was it. That was the game.
Just real quick, before we move on, Brandon,
boring.
How dare you say this was a terrible game? Because this was a carbon
terrible.
Copy of what
points.
I'm told is the golden era of NBA basketball, the Jordan era. You want to see a lot of games that look like 86, 85 rock fights? Turn on any of those Jordan playoff games, and you're going to find them. So, Jenna, I thought it was a great game. I thought it was amazing. Oh. Theater, drama, I thought it was spectacular, personally,
of
Jenna.
Of course you did. Of course goodness. You did. You know, I got to give Wilds credit. Wilds, you sat on the show yesterday. You said, I'm not worried. Bucks are going to come home. They're going to do what they do at home. Everything's going to be fine. Brandon may not have liked the game, but how do you think Bucks fans should be feeling today after that Game 3 win?
Oh, well, Jenna, Bucks fans should be feeling like an enthusiastic math teacher, like Bill Nye, the science guy. Because here's the thing. Math will save the Bucks. The Bucks got away with a win, but somehow they shot even worse than they did in Brooklyn. And just for the record, the Bucks are the fourth best three-point shooting team in the entire league. But in these three games, they shot 20%, then they shot a little better, 29%, and I was like, you know what? When they get home cooking, those shots will start to go in. Nope, actually got worse. Shot 19% and escaped with the win. So the good news is, this is why this should sound like a math teacher, the math will work out. Just keep shooting. You guys are good shooters. PJ Tucker missed all of his shots. He's one of the best shooters in the league from the corner. He's good. But just like a math teacher, Nick, I'm going to allow everybody to lead the class. Good job. Good shooting. Keep shooting. Keep shooting. Yep. Hey, Giannis, can you stay after class? I want to talk to you. Yeah. You took eight threes. You were not a good three-point shooter, my friend. No more threes That's for right. you. I'm sorry. And I know I just said math will save us. You are not good. And then I looked up, Nick, do you know he also was shooting threes against the Heat? He is 3 for 24 in the playoffs. 3 for 24. Yeah. Enough. You know what? I call it at 20. 3 for 24 is unacceptable. Yeah. No more threes. I know he's a star, but these bricks cannot happen anymore. For the love of God, one bounced over the rim and they had to stop the game.
Killers.
So when that happens, you're done.
And they're possession killers. And he did hit the one that was huge, but 1 of 8 is 1 of 8. And so here's why I think the Bucks should feel great, Brandon. Because I know Giannis had 33. I didn't think Giannis played very well after the first quarter. First quarter, no. It was like he was locked into first things first. He played the whole quarter. He attacked. He did everything we asked him to do. And then after that, he fell back into shooting the jump shots. So he can play better. I agree with Wilds. I think they are due for an 18-plus point or an 18-plus 3 points made explosion in game 4. But the other thing, and I'm curious if you're starting to come around to my side of thinking on this part of it, not on the series, but PJ Tucker had the most impactful 0-point game anyone can have. He had the best plus minus of anyone out there. He made Durant work. And Kyrie, It is hard for Mike Budenholzer to outcoach somebody, but I think he might be doing it with Nash. Right. Nash had the worst challenge of the year. I don't know what plays he was drawing up at the end. And his strategy with Kyrie is play the whole game, kid. And so what you're seeing is one of the most clutch playoff guys of his generation is gassed at the end of these games. Kyrie is exhausted. He's playing 11 minutes every quarter. So I think the Bucks should feel really good going into game four.
Well, you said they should feel great. I think the answer is grateful. There's not another game in the playoffs that you'll see the Nets score 83 points. That was trash. They were so flat. Kyrie was flat. KD was flat. Joe Harris couldn't hit a 10-foot jumper. He couldn't even make a layup. And then you got Bruce Brown. We talked about Bruce Brown in the last shot, but Bruce Brown, that little floater.
Well.
I mean, he was 0-for-10, like what, 1-for-10 on a little floater. I'm tired of seeing that little floater, especially when your team is flat. And KD was the only one that just kept going. There was a couple times where, you know, he missed a couple in a row and he just kept shaking his head and he just kept going. And finally he broke through, and that's one of the reasons why they had a decent fourth quarter. But they're not going to be held to 83 points again. So the Bucks should feel grateful, Jenna.
All right, a lot of work to be done before game four Sunday afternoon. That game also in Milwaukee. Let us head out west because Donovan Mitchell was at it again last night. Spider just too much to handle for Kawhi and Paul George.
Spider.
To be discussed next. This is First Things First. Time now for Drawing a Blank. Another day, another night from Donovan Mitchell. Last night, big one. Clippers Jazz game 2, 37 points for Donovan Mitchell. As the Jazz got the win, they take a 2-0 series lead. So, Brandon, Donovan's 37-point performance was blank.
A stamp. You know, he's stamping his game and letting everybody know that when you mention Zion and Luka and Ja and Trey, you need to mention me as well as one of the young superstars is going to carry this NBA forward, that's going to push us to new limits. Like, this dude is a superstar. If he played in a bigger market, we wouldn't be treating him like this. You wouldn't hear Shaquille O'Neal talking trash to him on TNT after the game the way he did months ago. So this is a stamp. This dude is a bona fide star, a superstar. We need to start treating him as such. This is two playoffs where he's just completely taking over games. So let's respect that man and give him his flowers.
All right, my answer is not surprising. I'll explain that in a moment. But first, speaking of giving flowers, by the way, what a year for 1-800-Flowers and local boutiques and florists. Everyone's getting flowers. That's the new thing everybody's getting. It used to just be for funerals and weddings. Now everybody's getting flowers.
Yeah, you don't want to wait.
But I would like to give flowers to one. I get
you don't
it.
Wait.
I understand. I would like to give flowers to Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall yesterday said, reminds me of a young D. Wade with a better jump shot. Do you know who co-signed that take late night on Twitter?
Ooh.
None other than LeBron Raymond James. The great tweeter Cuffs the Legend pointed out that comparison. LeBron replied and said it's feeling like it. So good job, Brandon. I say it's not surprising, Wilds, because he's played 30 career playoff games. This is the sixth time he's gone for more than 35. And that's so 20% of his playoff games, he does something like this. You pointed this out also yesterday, Wilds. He was like, hey, he's the greatest playoff scorer, top five all time. So I guess it's not surprising.
Yeah, I'm going to give Brandon some flowers. Brandon, you got to send me your address. I'm actually going to deliver a beautiful bouquet because my answer is D-Wade-esque too. But for a little bit of a different reason. I think this is the ascension of D-Wade. So when D-Wade got drafted, like, oh, yeah, he's good. You know, he's like the fifth best guy there. You got Bosh, you got LeBron, you got Melo. You got Darko, he's supposed to be good. It turns out he wasn't so good. But then he's sort of like the kid, he's like started to become like, oh, he's good. He's really good. And it's like, hold on, he's a star. I was like, hold on, he's one of the best players in NBA history? We are getting close to that with Donovan. The other night on NBA TV, Isaiah Thomas, like, he's one of the best one-on-one players we've ever seen in the NBA. So the legend of Donovan just keeps growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
I don't know what the ceiling is, but whatever it is, there's going to be flowers involved.
High point. Head to Milwaukee. All right. Nets Bucks.
I need
PJ
10
Tucker,
minutes here, guys.
Kevin Durant. Getting into it in the third quarter this game. I need 15 seconds just to finish this. They shared some nice words, I'm sure. Nice to see you. How you doing? Great to match wits with you. Security guard came down to the floor to have to separate them. Brandon, the KD PJ Tucker scuffle was blank.
It was captivating. I mean, this was really intense. It was great. PJ Tucker is a bad man. This is a dude that you don't want to mess with. You know, a lot of times when you see our superstars getting a little scuffles, whether it's LeBron James, you know, you got Steph Curry at times, you never take it serious. They never cross the line. These are great guys. But last night, it was captivating because I was like, wow, this could potentially happen. Someone could throw a punch. And then all of a sudden, you see like 20 security guys coming in with blue shirts and green shirts, black shirts.
That's
they
don't
care about
in.
The fight. This was so
Brandon,
good.
Brandon, but that's
you,
how I gotta jump
you
in.
Bet not. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Brandon, this is not, no, I'm not going to make you mad here. Trust me. This is absolutely infuriating. I'm going to do a callback a bit. People that watched a lot of LeBron with the Cavs or just watch a lot of League Pass will know it. There's a cop in Cleveland. He's in full uniform at these games that whenever players start jawing, he runs on the court and puts his hand on his hip like there's about to be some major disturbance.
He does it.
And I've always watched. Yeah, yes, he does. I've always watched him and like, what is this guy? What does he think's going to happen here? This is the escalation of that. And if I'm, PJ is not mad at KD anymore. He's mad at that fella in the black who ran on and bodied him like he's a bouncer at a club. Listen, arena security. I know the NBA has enhanced it. It is to protect the players from the fans, not the players from the players. You can't go on the court, buddy. You what are you doing?
But Nick could have been a memo.
Fella in black. I don't know, but watch the guy in blue, Brandon. The guy in blue then tells the guy in black, what are you doing? What are you doing, buddy? You're not here to run up on PJ Tucker. These guys both went to Texas. They played each other for years. Nothing bad's going to happen. Fella in black, calm down. Calm down, arena security.
Yeah, I thought...
It's no good, Brandon.
I thought it was interesting, but the first thing that came to my mind was maybe because it's the playoff time and there's so many eyeballs globally on the game that the NBA said, you know what, make sure it doesn't escalate and go too far. And that's every single game. So that's the first thing that I thought about when I saw the security rush the court that way.
But Wilds, as is often the case, you know what causes the escalation? The folks whose job in theory it is to de-escalate. He's running in their body and folks. PJ Tucker ain't having that. So no, this really made me mad. Katie and PJ Tucker are just talking to each other. These guys have no business running between them. None whatsoever.
That's
Nick
right.
Is so
That's
fired
right.
Up.
I think it's I think Michelle Roberts gets involved here. I don't think it's super, super funny, to be honest with you. I think it's actually a problem where, like, I know it didn't happen, but nothing ever happens till it happens. Like, you could easily, like, hit PJ Tucker and have him fall and have him get injured. Not to be, like, the grandma, like, overly worried. But
no,
you can't
right.
have security doing this. I think the Players Association gets involved and talks to Adam Silver, and it's another security miscue from the NBA. Not great.
Back here at Chris Broussard, and Broussard... Your Clippers, can we please talk about them? Because they find themselves in an awfully familiar spot. Down 0-2 in a series. This time, though, it's not Luka they got to stop, but Donovan Mitchell. 37 points last night. He had 45 in game one. Jazz led by as many as 21 in this one. They had to rally late, though, for the win. But it was a win. So, Broussard, let us focus on the Clippers, though. Can they now come back from yet another 0-2 deficit?
First of all, Jenna, I don't know when they became my Clippers again. All right? I specifically remember last week saying, I won't be so obnoxious to reclaim them. They are Brandon's Clippers. He's got to stick with them. But no, to answer your question, can they? Yes. But I'll admit, after what I saw last, series with them, I won't write them off. But I'm skeptical. And history is against them. There, no team in NBA history has ever come back from multiple 2-0 deficits in the same postseason. So the history is very much against them. And I have to admit, the eye test is against them right now. Obviously, you mentioned Donovan Mitchell having his way, right? Having his way. The thing is this. Last series, Luka had his way. But Luka was the only player they had to worry about that could break down their defense with dribble penetration. Yeah. Now in Utah, you got Donovan Mitchell, yes. But last night you saw you also have Jordan Clarkson. He had 24 points, and he was able to get what he wanted. And that's not even to mention Mike Conley potentially coming back. So there's that. Secondly, Kawhi Leonard, 22 points, 47% shooting in the series. Solid, but they need Kawhi to be dominant, and he hasn't been able to do it. And I got to shout out Bojan Bogdanovic because he was in Kawhi's jock last night. So give him credit. He defended him well. You don't really see that type of one-on-one defense a lot anymore, so I have to give him credit. Third, Rudy Gobert's presence. Nick has dissed Gobert every chance he gets, but last night he showed you why he is the deserving defensive player of the year. He is deterring the Clippers from getting to the rim and in the paint, and in turn, that has also hurt their drive and kick game. So they had 11 threes last night. That's well below their season and postseason average. So that part of their game is hurting. And then fourthly, they went to the zone. And it went well, right? They were able to slow down Donovan Mitchell in the second half with that zone defense.
Yeah.
And they hustled. I give the Clippers credit. Their intensity, their urgency on the defensive end was there. But when they played with that urgency defensively against Dallas, they won. They did it against the Jazz, and they still lost. So I'm not going to write them off, but I admit I do think they're in trouble.
They're in huge trouble, and to amplify some of Broussard's points, you know how we know that Kawhi might be, and it's amazing, it's game two of the second round, but might be a little out of gas? When he lost a jump ball to Bojan Bogdanovic late in the game. Like, what? I mean, we saw Kawhi. Game six, Kawhi against the Clippers. He was really good game seven. Game six might have honestly been the best game of his entire career on both ends of the court. For some reason, though, he can't tap into that very often. Listen, Ty wants to play Kawhi and Paul George 44-plus minutes. He played Paul George the entire second half. He played Kawhi 38 minutes because that's all Kawhi can do. And I'm not taking a shot. Honest, I promise. I hope, because I know I've been hard on Kawhi. His body, it does not allow him to do what we want him to do, which is guard Donovan, score 30, do it all, and try to assert yourself the best player in the world. His body just won't let him do it. Brandon mentioned Paul George during the break. Like, is Paul George going to have a big game? He's not. And at this point, the expectations for Paul George have dropped so much. We're like, oh, he's not hitting the side of the backboard, so that's good. Fact of the matter is this. Since the first three games of these playoffs, so the last six games they've played, I should say, he's shooting, what, 36% from the field?
Right.
That ain't great. So that's their two top guys. And then the other thing, Broussard, and you mentioned this, I will give you credit, even though you slander me all the time, saying I hate Rudy Gobert, I voted him second on the ballot, the NBA returned back to me. Even during the year, when you were flirting with your ex, the Clippers, your concern for them was their performance in the clutch. And last night, it looked like we were going to be able to go to bed early. The Jazz were up 21, and then the Clippers played perfect basketball on both sides to take the lead. Here were their offensive possessions after Reggie Jackson hit that three to give them the lead midway through the fourth. It's the following. Batum missed a three. Paul George got two free throws. Marcus Morris missed three. Patrick Beverly missed three. That Mark Jones says, oh, Beverly in rhythm. Mark, there is no in rhythm for Patrick Beverly. Doesn't exist. Marcus Morris missed another three. Patrick Beverly, short-armed layup. Marcus Morris missed another three. And now it's Jazz up by 10 and the game's over. And if you looked at Brandon, their games against the Mavs, none of them were close late. They played well enough to blow it open late in the fourth quarter. Like, they don't execute late in these games. Kawhi's not taking the shots. Paul George isn't attacking. I think they are in big, big trouble, Brandon.
You know what? Look, I picked this team early in the year. You guys know that. And this is the first time I got to admit, man, that you're right. They're in trouble. When you looked at last night, man, you know, they were flat. And it was a brutal night for me watching them. They came out in the first game, and they dominated through three quarters. It looked like, I said it, the Jazz shouldn't have been on the same court as the Clippers. And then you turn on the game, and you're watching it, game two, and it's just like, they turned it around. The Jazz was just the better team. I mean, you look at Paul George. Paul George is the key. Paul George, can we get 30-plus from Paul George? Can he contribute just a little bit more? Now, he's been solid all year. He's been really good all year. And then in the playoffs, he hasn't really shown up to be playoff P. I don't know if he's trying to be too conservative or not, but he needs to take the ball, take control of the game, and say, you know what, Kawhi? I got us this game. I got us. Whatever you chip in, that's just bonus. That's icing on top. I need to see that type of Paul George show up for this team to have a chance. But they did that last series against the Mavs. They had a less than a 20% chance to come out of that series down 0-2. They pulled it off against a better team, a team that's hungry, a Donovan Mitchell that is trying to put a stamp on his performance and his place in this game. I don't see them coming back. I really don't. If Paul George can't step up and contribute at a high level, whilst there's so many people right now saying that Paul George, he doesn't deserve the super in front of his star. He may not even deserve either one, superstar. Right. Like, can you please show up and take it to a whole nother level? This is the moment for Paul George. Now, it's going to be tough, but we'll see what happens moving forward.
Here's the thing. I don't think it's Paul George's fault. I don't think it's Kawhi's fault. I don't think it's Ty Lue's fault. I don't think it's Steve Ballmer's fault. Broussard, I think they're playing a perfectly built team. You're watching that game and you're like, huh. Unlike every other playoff team, where you look around and like, well, I know why you're good, but I also know your kind of fatal flaw. You've got too many stars, and Giannis, you're good, but your kind of game is limited. And like, you guys have some like sort of you kind of fold in the you know, crunch time with the Clippers. You know, I don't know about the Suns. Do they have enough experience? I look at the Jazz, and they remind me of like going into someone's house that an interior designer has done. Like, look at this. Everything is in exactly the right spot. It looks perfect. And when we look at NBA champions over the last, let's say, 30 years, you've seen sort of the superstar teams, the teams that have too many weapons. But then there's teams like the 08 Celtics were like, huh, you guys, everybody knows their roles. Or like the Spurs. Everybody knows what they're supposed to do. You've got the defensive stopper. You've got the superstar. You've got the sixth man. You got the guy knocking down shots. To me, that team looked flawless. They're not like flawless, like so excellent, but like literally without flaws. Does this team remind you of any historical teams that have won the championship, or is it just me?
Well, first of all, let me ask you, are you predicting a championship now? You called them the perfect.
I don't know. That's
together.
I'm shocked. But they just look so good. They look so balanced.
They look good. I won't pick them over Brooklyn, but they do look like a very good team. They're well put together. I'm going to say this because Nick Wright and people of his ilk like to look back at the 90s and show pictures of Jeff Hornacek and Greg Ostertag and say, this is who Jordan was beating. Couldn't I just put out a random picture of Joe Ingles and say, this is the LeBron era? This is the Durant era? I mean, these are the guys they're going against?
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying. So you can ball. Don't worry about what a guy looks like or anything. Joe Ingles can ball, all right? I'm with you, Wilds, in that they look like a very good team. They're not your, you know, you go back to, say, Detroit in 2004, Seattle in 1979. You go back to those teams that didn't really have a superstar, and you say, is that this Jazz team? No, because to your point, they've got a superstar.
Well,
so they've got him.
Well,
they've got the great seven-footer that can block shots, and they've got shooters. They're good.
First of all, the poor 79 Sonics, the reward they get for winning a title, but being the worst team to ever win a title, is they always get brought up in these discussions. Like, oh, well, could they be the 79 worst Sonics? Well, it's the worst team to ever win a title, so maybe.
I don't know about that.
But listen, they're definitely the worst team to win the title. Look it up. Here's the thing.
Oh, my God.
Wilds, because I was one of the people that early in the year was like, I'm not going to buy into the Jazz. You can't convince me to buy into the Jazz. I've seen this story before. It was called the 2015 Atlanta Hawks. That was because I did not believe they had the guy. A guy who can say, even when our shots aren't falling, I got you. Donovan is trying to prove me wrong. I know what Bogdanovich looks like. I know what Ingles looks like. I know what Jordan Clarkson. I understand Rudy Gobert's rim defense and screen assists. That only gets you this far. They had all that last year. Bogdanovich was hurt, and they blew a 3-1 lead in the first round of the playoffs. But if Donovan has jumped not one level but two levels, it changes the math. And that's what – so, yes, it is a very well-constructed team, but a team that had a ceiling, if not for what Donovan's doing. And lastly, just quickly, I want to say something about Brandon Marshall for a moment, because for a lot of guys who were pro athletes and now are analysts, they got to wear multiple hats at the same time. And it's like, listen, I'm not an athlete anymore. I'm an analyst. I feel like Brandon Marshall just became a basketball analyst in this moment, and here's why. Broussard can relate to this. There is an extra venom and anger you spew towards a player or a team if they are proving you wrong. And that's what Brandon just had for Paul George. Like that? He's like, God dog it, Paul George. I picked you. I believed in you. Like, when guys make your predictions look wrong as an analyst, you get personally angry at them. And I felt that from Brandon. I felt the anger. I'm like, oh,
can't get an easy 30?
That was a nice
Can
moment.
We get an easy 30,
no,
please?
No, you
nope,
can't.
Nope,
a big shot, big moment, please.
You can't.
All right, take a turn. Nick's got to hand out some NBA playoff medals. Maybe KD, he had a team-high 30 points in the Game 3 loss to the Bucks. Maybe not. Gonna have to handle the sorrow of missing a medal from Nick Wright. Who did it better, Nick, last night?
KD got what we would call a hard 30. He had to work for all of them. Maybe that's why he was exhausted at the end of the game, standing in the corner instead of demanding the ball. Bronze medal, Giannis. Giannis spent the clip in the first quarter and then spent the last three quarters trying to be Joe Harris. Unfortunately, he shot like Joe Harris did last night, which is terribly, but still good enough for a bronze as the Bucks steal a win. Silver medal, Donovan, 37-3-4, 27 in the first half. I thought we might see another 50-point game from Donovan Mitchell, but he cooled off in the first half. And the gold medal, Chris Middleton, 35-15, clutch shots down the stretch, and 35 points when your team scores 86 points is like 45 points if they had scored a regular number of points. So Chris Middleton was the best player on the Bucks in the fourth quarter when they absolutely had to have it. He gave you 35, finally snapped out of his shooting slump. Kevin Wilds pantomiming how those were claps, telling me how great my medal stand is. Thank you, Wilds. Always a great teammate. There it is, Jenna Wolf. The medals from last night in the NBA.
That's who made it. That's who made it. But Kevin Wilds, tell us who just missed the cut.
Okay, I was asking if I could throw it if we had time to do the break, which we do. Thank you very much. All right, so Giannis got called for another 10-second violation. It was actually 13. We had Steve Javy on the broadcast. They're like, Steve, what do you think about this? Steve's like, well, actually, I like to start counting a little bit late because I don't want it to be 8.9 or 9.2, so I let it go to 13, and my head actually started leaking blood out of my ears. I had no idea what you're talking about.
Why is Giannis looking surprised?
Buddy, stop spinning the ball. It's not a free timeout. I think you should call it every single time, but I know some people are against it. Nick, what's your take?
No, I agree.
And Brandon, he's been shooting terribly. So this gives him a reason to change the routine, right? Like, it's not like, well, this routine works. Right. No, it doesn't. Yeah. It's against the rules, and
listen,
you're missing. So change it. Just catch and shoot, buddy.
Catch it. No, he just catch it. One, two, three, spin, shoot. That's it. Just quick. No just a little spin. Quicker. Why is he surprised?
One banana, two bananas.
What's the whistle? Why are they blowing the whistle?
Nobody
what's the
counts
for?
With bananas.
Held it for 30
bananas.
Seconds.
Nobody counts that, with bananas.
I got to 10 bananas. I was like, shoot the ball. Hey, KD just missed a medal from Nick, but should the Nets be encouraged by their Game 3 loss? We will discuss in about 137 bananas. That's next. First things first.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Nobody.
Back here, first things first, and we are joined by Nets analyst Sarah Kustak. Lucky us. We're talking last night's Game 3. We talked about how big this game was for Giannis. Greek Freak turned in a 33-point performance, just enough to go along with Chris Middleton's 35 to eke out the win, beat Brooklyn in a low-scoring affair. Here was Giannis after the game.
Win is a win. Win is a win. And at the end of the day, as I said, last game, lose by 40, lose by one, it's still the same thing. You know, it's still the last. And today we didn't score a lot. It didn't look as pretty, but at the end of the day, we got a win.
But we had our chances down the stretch. It was a possession by possession game. You know, both teams battling. So that's a good old fashioned playoff game right there.
With that, we say good morning to Sarah. Sarah, how should the Nets feel after losing Game 3 to the Bucks?
Good morning, Jenna. Good morning to all of you. Great to be here. I think confident, measured, maybe a little bit refocused. I don't think that they thought this series would be one that they would just walk right through. So I think there is a level of embracing this type of small adversity. And when you look at the fact that at the start of the series, especially considering the way Milwaukee looked in that first round, to think about the fact if you were without James Harden and without Jeff Green for the first three games of this series, and you tell the Nets are up 2-1, I believe they would take it. You got two of the top scoring teams in the league. I am not sure that Brooklyn will ever shoot that poorly again. And I think a lot of it came down, you know, sometimes it's about the shot profile, right? So is it more on what the defense is doing, or is it simply missing shots? And the fact that between Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, they go 20 of 50 from the field. And a lot of those were clean looks. Joe Harris, 1 of 11. There are a variety of aspects that I think give you confidence if you are the Brooklyn team, on top of the fact that Milwaukee, you know, they were going to come out ready and loaded for bear. They're back home. They were spotted themselves a 21-point lead. So to think about the fact that it came down to the final possessions, there is a lot that you look at in more than anything when it came to defensively what they were doing. The shot selection, again, of Giannis for Milwaukee, our biggest questions have been, what type of adjustments will they make? What will Mike Budenholzer do to put his guys in the best position possible? And when you come away with a win, we heard Giannis talking, there's always that question, do they figure something out? Oh, we figured something out about this Nets team. And I am not sure there was anything you take away from that game in particular, if you're Milwaukee, that makes you feel like we figured something out about this Nets team. So for me, more of it is, how is Milwaukee feeling? And did they raise their level of confidence? Or are they relieved that they were able to walk away with a win in that fashion when they were back at home?
Look, the Nets are clearly the better team. And you said something interesting. You know, you said coming into this series, you know, the Nets didn't think that it would be easy. They knew it would be a dogfight. But they moved the bar. You know, the standard is higher now. After games 1 and 2, blowing this team out by 30 points, being up by 30 at half, you move the bar. So for them to come out flat, I get it, but they should feel deflated. They should feel, you know, disappointed. They had an opportunity to really just totally dominate and own this team. Going up 3-0 against this team, a team that you thought, you know, would give you problems.
That's right.
Like, you missed it. KD, at one point in the game, KD was like 4 for 17 or something like that. You had Joe Harris, 1 for 11. Come on, Joe. help a brother out, Joe. You got Kyrie Irving. It was just like those guys was going through the motions. And then down the stretch, you had Bruce Brown. Bruce Brown did a phenomenal job all year in moments. He did a phenomenal job in moments in the game last night. We're just making some big plays. But down the stretch where it really counts, you had one guy step up and take his game to a whole nother level after struggling mightily in the first half, and that was KD. But this little baby floater, I was tired of seeing that baby floater in the third quarter, Nick, and in the fourth quarter. Like, it wasn't working. And then to end the game, and you got 11 seconds to go, you throw a terrible inbounds pass, and now Bruce has it with 8 seconds left, and you don't force it to KD or Kyrie. That's a huge problem. They should feel defeated. They should feel deflated. This was not a great look for the Nets.
Well, yeah, emotionally, after they played so poorly in the first quarter to storm back to take the lead, for KD to score those 7 straight fourth quarter points, it looks like the Nets are going to steal a win and the series is going to be over. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh, man, you know, if Milwaukee wins game 4 and Vegas has it essentially as a pick 'em, now we're in a best of 3. And I'm not as close to the team as Sarah is, obviously. I'm not there for practices, and I don't get to talk to the coaches and the GM. But I would imagine when they built the greatest collection, arguably, of offensive talent in league history, the plan wasn't. And in the biggest game of our year so far, the 2 biggest shots will be taken by Bruce Brown. Maybe I'm wrong. Steve Nash has done some interesting things this year, but I don't think that's quite how he drew it up. Part of that is because KD is just inexplicably, after being the best guy on the court in the second half last night, just standing outside of the play. He doesn't have to take the shot, but he should be in the action. It's felt like that play, there was 3 seconds, not 11 seconds. They had plenty of time. But I want to talk about the other star. Because, Sarah, I want your take on this, not only because you're close to the team, but because you played ball at a very high level. I think they might be asking a little too much from Kyrie. I understand Harden is out. But if you remove the fourth quarter of game 2, where no starters played because it was a blowout, there have been 132 minutes played in this series. Kyrie has been on the court for 121 of them. Nash is not giving him any rest at all, I think out of necessity. But what that is depriving Kyrie of is his legs late. And Kyrie's one of the best fourth quarter guys we've had in this league. When you're watching the games, are you seeing what I'm seeing, that it looks like late in these games Kyrie is exhausted? He's got Drew Holiday on him, who is maybe the best point guard defender in basketball, and he's playing 11 minutes a quarter, and it just feels to me like Kyrie at the end of these games is just spent.
I would disagree with that, in the sense that this is the time you are playing your best guys the biggest minutes. Of all people, Kyrie, I think, understands his feel, his body, and how much effort he could exert. And he's doing it on both ends of the floor. This, I think, is a one-game isolated scenario that he's missing shots in the fourth quarter. However, no, like, that's what you want. I think we get on coaches at this time of the season, Mike Budenholzer being one of those, who are not playing their stars enough minutes. And in many senses, this is a steady build of what you're doing for the big picture of what this team is trying to accomplish in the postseason. So similarly to how you cannot overreact to those first 2 games, I think it's the same instance here. And I think if Kyrie Irving wasn't playing as much or not playing those minutes, we would be wondering why Steve Nash isn't better utilizing the guys that should be on the floor for the maximum amount of time. Because that's what you see in the playoffs. Shortened rotations, heavy minutes for your stars. I would attribute that to a off night, really top to bottom for this Nets team, but Kyrie at moments.
All right, can I put up a graphic, Katana, and show Sarah why I think the Bucks should feel very, very confident? Sarah, the Bucks are a good 3-point shooting team, and they have been terrible for 3 games. So there's 2 theories coming out of this. Look, they would have won game 1 if they shot their normal percentage. And last night would have been a blowout. So there's 2 theories, Sarah. One is that the Nets are playing great defense, and this trend will continue, and they'll shut down the Bucks 3-point shooting team. The other theory, which I subscribe to, spoiler alert, is that these are going to start going in. Maybe not Giannis's. That one wasn't great. You got to call security to get the ball out of the ring. But I think these are going to start to go in. I think Middleton shots are going to go in. Jrue Holiday shots are going to go in. P.J. Tucker's corner threes, he should get some more of them, and they're going to start to go in. To the point that, unlike Nick, who has a bottomless well of gambling money that he has earned and can buy tickets to every game, I cannot. I can buy a ticket to one game. I don't know if the series is going to go seven. I'm like, huh, maybe I should buy a ticket to game five, because I could see the home team has never lost a game. I could see them winning next game, and I could see them stealing a game in Brooklyn, because eventually, once those shots are going to go in, that's the way you beat the Nets. Like, holy cow, all of a sudden these shots are going in. Instead of shooting 20%, they shot 50% from three, and Brooklyn lost. So I guess my question to you is this. Do you think the Nets are playing such great defense that the Bucks will keep on shooting poorly, or is it just random luck and these are going to start raining in?
Kevin, I think it's a little bit of both. However, I felt that way after game one. When you looked at the way things laid out after game one, in my head, I'm like, Milwaukee has got to start shooting better from three. I assumed they were going to get to the basket more. I assumed they were going to be more aggressive getting into the paint, loosen up the defense, create some more open looks. And that's not been the case. And I know we kind of chuckle a little bit, but Giannis took 8 3-point shots. And that is playing into how the Nets have been defending them. And we talk so much about this Nets switching scheme 1 through 5, but they haven't been switching on those ball screens with Giannis. And both Blake Griffin, Nicholas Claxton, you said, given him just enough of a cushion to take some of those extended looks, which has boded well for what the Nets are trying to do defensively. Yeah. So I think they will That's shoot better than being around the 20s where they're at? I would assume so. But I haven't seen a lot of clean open looks where you think, man, Milwaukee is just missing some wide open shots. On the flip side of things, it's very much of what I saw out of Brooklyn. So it's going to be more interesting to me to see, does Coach Bud try and change up with the point of attack, the initiation? Are you having Jrue Holiday run point more? Are you not leaving Giannis on an island at the top of the key trying to playmate? Like, those are the type of things that revert back to the three-point shots that they're missing have been challenged, contested shots, which has added to it. And, you know, Milwaukee's back at home, but I assume that they would go back to Fiserv Forum and shoot better, and that certainly was not the case, as we saw a lot of missed shots last night.
Always good stuff from Sarah Kustak next to a fern. Sarah, thank you so much. Back here on a Friday morning, first things first, we're talking Russell Wilson. So Russ had some really interesting things to say yesterday about what became a rather tumultuous offseason for the superstar quarterback, specifically the trade rumors swirling about. Take a listen.
I think there were some, you know, unfortunate frustrations after the season. Obviously, you want to win it all and do it all and do everything you can, you know. And I think everybody on our team does. We all want to win it. And, you know, I think unfortunately it got a little, a little bit blown out of proportion a little bit. There was a lot of teams out there that people were saying that I was going to or would go to. I requested a trade. I did not request a trade. I've always wanted to play here. You know, and the reality is, I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that, and I think that's just a reality. But I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here, and I'm here to win, and I'm here to win it all. Well, I think there's a lot of confusion because the reality is that I forget. I think I was in the Bahamas or somewhere, and everybody was saying that I requested a trade, and that wasn't true. So we made it clear that I did not request a trade, and then there was teams being flown around that I was going to go to those teams, this and that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, when you look back at it, you know, it's part of it's part of it, unfortunately. You know, and I think that, you know, more than anything else, you know, that I got my wish, you know, in the sense that I've always wanted to play here. That's where I am. That the reality was is that I didn't really want to go anywhere else. I wanted to play in Seattle. But if I had to go somewhere, these are the teams I would go to consider. At the end of the day, I have no trade clause, right? So I think, you know, I think for me, though, you know, I had a great conversation with Coach Carroll, you know, had a good, really great conversation with John, too. You know, and Coach Carroll and I spent a lot of time together one-on-one. And, you know, we're on the same page. You know, we're here to do what we're meant to do, and that's to win it all. And now I'm excited.
There's a lot to unpack unpack here.
So good.
After not speaking at all, Russ opened up and said all the words, apparently. Brandon, what was your reaction to Russ saying he never requested a trade?
Oh, man, we were on that train for, what, 2 months almost, tracking where Russell Wilson was going to land, what was going on. Look, there's some people out there just have it. They have this gift, the art and science down of playing with words, and they know how to articulate themselves. They know how to speak in front of people. They know how to say certain things to get people to move. Russell Wilson's one of them. We have two people on our show that have it. Hell, Jenna Wolf, you're one. Nick Wright, you're one. Like, you guys just have the art and science down. So when you look at Russ, he probably went there and said,
"Chop liver, Wilds. Chop liver."
Yeah, right. Sorry, Wilds is entertaining. Wilds have the art and science down to entertain. There's some people on TV, right, that just makes it fun. Yeah. They break up the monotony. Right. They take the stats and they just make it fun. That's Wilds. But no, here's the deal. So you have Russell Wilson walks into Pete Carroll's office, or maybe he was on a boat in the Bahamas like he said he was, and he called Pete and he said, "Hey, Pete, look, this is what I want. X, Y, Z. If we can't do this, here's four teams I want to go to. The Las Vegas Raiders, they're attractive. You have the New Orleans Saints, and there's a couple other teams he threw out there, or his agent threw out there.
Chicago
Bears. So I believe him here. Russ is not one of those guys that's going to stand in front of people and lie. Now, did he get creative with his words? Possibly, Nick.
Yeah, this is the Nick Wright school of truth telling. Which is, if you read it in a transcript, you're like, "I defy you, I dare you to find a lie." And it's like, "I can't." But am I telling the truth? Of course not. I've never related more to Russell Wilson, to be honest. Like, it's like, oh, like, I'm not lying, but I am definitely misleading, manipulating, and not telling the truth. It's a great tactic, and I don't know where and when he learned it, but I endorse it fully. It makes life easier. I mean, Wilds, what are we talking about here? I mean, this is the football version of depends on what the definition of is. Like, we know what we're talking about, and what we needed was a good F. Lee Bailey cross-examination, but that's not going to happen from the local Seattle media or from any media for that matter. So, if you're a Seahawks fan, Wilds, you got to feel good because it is resolved at this point. Even if that's just temporary, for this season, you're going to be fine. And then we'll see how this season goes. But I am not buying what Russ is selling. Even if I were him, I would be selling the exact same product. And let me tell you how good that product is, Wilds. Yeah. It's great. You can't live without it. Got to have it. 100%.
Yeah, so I think it was a masterful job, Brandon. Here's the question. I think there's two teams that should be very happy right now. Seattle Seahawks. And the Green Bay Packers. So I think Aaron Rodgers looks at that and says, "Huh, okay, like that's how it plays out. You cause a little bit of a fuss. You start some fires. They never really take off, and then you just kind of tamp them out, and then you move forward."
Right.
I think this is going to play out for Aaron Rodgers the exact same way. Do you feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to have more of a commotion, or do you see it's just going to be Aaron Rodgers soon with the new Green Bay Packers logo, just saying like, "Yeah, I never requested a trade. You know, I sat down, it all worked out."
Wow, I love that. Was masterful how you put those words together. Wow, I love that. That was really good,
stop,
man.
So you know what?
Jeez, I need to throw you. No, here's the deal, Wilds. This is why I disagree with you, and I don't think it will play out this way, is because I do believe it was black and white with Russell Wilson when he said from the beginning that I want to be a Seattle Seahawk. He said, "I'm the most winningest quarterback in through nine years, but there's some things that have to change. I want to continue to win. I want to continue to build on the Seattle Seahawk legacy. I want to continue to build on my legacy." Aaron Rodgers, on the other hand, is saying, like, "You know what? I did that. I've been here 16 years. I love you guys, but it's time to move on." Well, I love most of you guys outside of Brian Gutekunst. So I think that's the difference. It's black and white for Russ. Russ sat down and said, "Look, if you change these things, then I will stay. If not, then it's time for us to look at other opportunities." And then in Green Bay, I think it's just all bad, that relationship between him and that general manager.
All right, let's table that for a second and shift to Julio Jones. He was limited to just 9 games last year, dealing with hamstring issues in Atlanta. But he's a Titan now, and Titans don't have hamstrings. That's not true. Yesterday, Julio addressed those who are doubting his health. Take a listen to this.
At the end of the day, I believe in me. I know what I have in the tank. And we're talking about age is 32. Like, I'm young. Like, in football, you can say it's old, but you either do it or you don't. You know, this game don't change for me. I'm still fast and still strong. And to, you know, the games last year, I just, you know, had an issue where I didn't take enough time to heal up properly. But, you know, that was just my decision on going out there and just playing. There's no excuses, things like that. But I'll be ready to go. So for those who questioning my health and things like that, just stay tuned.
All right, Brandon, what did you make of what Julio had to say?
Yeah, this is where history, you need to throw history out, right? A lot of times we track numbers, we track behaviors, we track certain things, trends that probably, you know, try to predict the future. And a lot of times in professional sports, we look at it and say, oh, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, guys were playing in their prime at 26, but then when they hit 30, this is where we saw the drop off. Well, modern medicine, modern science, this is totally different now today than it was, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. All you got to do is follow a guy in the offseason, see how he's taking care of himself, seeing how he's eating. This is a dude who take care of himself. So 32 is nothing. 32 is 26 when you look at where guys were 20 years ago. So Julio Jones will be fine. Hell, they said the same thing about me back in 2014 playing in Chicago. You know, I had 721 yards. And everybody said I was done. Then all of a sudden I get traded. I don't even know what I got traded to the Jets for, maybe a bag of chips. And it's the same thing for Julio Jones. So this was year 9 for me. This is year 10 for Julio Jones. Julio Jones last year had 771 yards. He played 9 games. He'll come out and he'll probably have a better year than I had than my first year with the Jets, where I went for 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns in an all-pro year. Julio Jones is a dog. Julio Jones will be fine. I like it, Nick. Yeah, I know.
I agree with all that. Listen, I don't know if he's going to have better than that. Yeah, there you go.
You might be right.
Does anybody remember more details about their life than Brandon Marshall?
You might be right.
Got to get back to basketball. KD and PJ Tucker shared some nice, kind words with each other last night. Will that roll over into game 4? We'll talk about that next. First things first.
Wild dreams.
All right, with that wonderful piece of news, we welcome in Chris Broussard again. Nets Bucks game 3, Broussard. We talked about how big this was going to be for Giannis. He showed up. He was listening. He turned in a 33-point performance. Just good enough for the win. And they beat Brooklyn, the Bucks did, in game 3. Here was Giannis afterwards.
Win is a win. Win is a win. And at the end of the day, as I said, last game, lose by 40, lose by 1, it's still the same thing. You know, it's still a loss. And today we didn't score a lot. It didn't look as pretty, but at the end of the day, we got a win.
But we had our chances down the stretch. It was a possession by possession game, you know, both teams battling. So that's a good old fashioned playoff game right there.
You know, we saw Bruce Brown being the net to take the shot in the waning seconds of this game instead of perhaps two other options, one named Kyrie, one KD. I don't know. But Broussard, you said after game 2, this series was over. Remember how you said it? It was over. You still think so after game 3?
let me start with this, Jenna. I'm happy for Giannis. I really like Giannis, and it'll look much better on his resume to lose in 5 or 6 games rather than to get swept. So I am legitimately happy for him. But wow. Yes, this is over. It is still very much over. Look, the Nets were out of it all night. From the very beginning, that's when right. Kevin Durant turned the ball over on their first possession, to missing their first 7 shots, to falling behind 32-9, to the very end, when, as you said, Jenna, they got 2 of the best one-on-one players ever, and somehow they execute so poorly that Bruce Brown takes the big shot. They were out of it. What happened was they didn't show up. And they suddenly, in the second quarter, Bruce Brown and a couple other role players start playing well. And they say, hold on, we're back in this thing. We might as well try to win it. But they never had it all night. Right. Kevin Durant, he shot less than 40% for the first time in a playoff game since May of 2018. Kyrie Irving played one good quarter. And Joe Harris, one of the best shooters on the planet, missed 10 of his 11 shots, including some wide open jumpers. Terrible. He missed 6 of his 7 threes. So they were out of it. And meanwhile, Giannis, credit to him, plays a strong game, strong enough to get on Knicks medal stand. Chris Middleton played his best game since he was at Porter Gaud High School in Charleston, South Carolina. And they still barely win at home.
Right.
Are you kidding me? It's over. Right. Let's go home. Let's go home.
Okay. All right. Okay. Broussard.
I love
this
it.
This is such a one-way slanted conversation. You're like, the Nets did all these things poorly and still lost and barely lost. Well, the Bucks didn't exactly bathe themselves in glory, having one of their worst three-point shooting games in 3 years, where Giannis and Middleton were the only guys to show up except for the Drew Holiday layup late offensively, and yet they still won. But I think we all can agree, Broussard can say it's over, but I don't think Broussard would be shocked if the Bucks win game four. And if a series is 2-2, by definition, it ain't over. Now, if it's 3-0, by definition, it actually is over, as teams are like 0 and 242 down 3-0. Can't come back from that in the NBA. So had the Nets won this game, it would be over. And they had an opportunity to win it, and I want to just toss it back to Broussard quickly on this last couple possessions. Because the possession before the one we're about to show, Bruce Brown took the shot, but at least it was in the action. Oh, we can show them both, maybe. I don't know. But this is, all right, so here you've got Bruce Brown taking a floater. At least it's in the action. KD, though, is just watching. And KD was unstoppable late. And then the final possession, you know, Broussard, I don't believe the best guy has to take the last shot. But I'd like him to be involved. KD is just standing in the corner. And so when they built the greatest collection of offensive talent ever, I don't think it was so Bruce Brown could go Carlton at the end of games. And I know Bruce Brown had played well up until the final couple minutes, but Broussard, heavy is the head that wears the crown, and all of NBA Twitter has decided this is Kevin Durant is the best player on the planet. Doesn't the best player on the planet need to be involved in the action here? Like, is that too harsh? Especially when he had been red hot in the fourth quarter. Doesn't he need to be involved in this play? They had plenty of time, Broussard.
Yeah, it's too harsh. Now, Bruce Brown, you're right. He took a lot of floaters at the end of that game that he missed, you know, over Brooke Lopez and stuff like that. Yeah, right. I'm not too mad at Durant. Is he spotting up? Hey, hit me. And I mean, he doesn't look like he's ready for the ball. But I've seen LeBron, I've seen Michael Jordan even not be involved at the end of a big play. Remember when Paxson hit the big shot? Jordan wasn't involved. He passed the ball in from the backcourt.
That's a great
point. Pippen, to Horace Grant, Paxson. So I'm just saying, I'm not mad about this. Because Durant took the last shot anyway. I mean, it wasn't like he ran from that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. The Nets are clearly the better team. They moved the bar higher. The standard has changed. When they came out in games one and game two and went into half up 30 points, you moved the bar. So for them to come out this way and you hit on it, from the tip, a turnover from the tip, Kyrie Irving chasing down the ball or going past half court, letting it go out. Like, you guys came out flat. You guys had no juice. There was no pop in their legs, you know. And then you had a couple spurts here and there. You had Bruce, who got him in position down the stretch, and then you had KD have a nice little fourth quarter. But other than that, it was flat. Like, how do you, if you're Joe Harris, how do you go 1-for-11? Like, the team needs you. Let's go. The superstars, Kyrie, no pop, no juice. Wasn't trying to, you know, take over the game. And KD, he stayed confident. Although he was struggling, he kept shooting the ball, and that's why he was able to keep the team close that towards the end. But at the end of the day, they should feel deflated because you had this team down. You could have went up against a team that everybody thought you were going to battle in the series. You could have went up 3-0. This could have been over, like, next game. But now you're in a dogfight. So they should feel deflated because they had a great opportunity, Wilds. This was definitely a missed opportunity for the Nets.
Ooh, the Nets fans are feeling very nervous. We haven't seen any jerseys from Brandon Marshall, which is the sign that they feel very, very nervous. Here's the thing.
Where my jersey at?
Nobody likes math in the morning. I get it, right? You know, it's like, let me get eggs in a calculator. But bear with me, this will make sense. The Bucks are the fourth best three-point shooting team in the entire league. They shoot 39%. In these last three games, they have shot 20%, they've shot 29%, they shot 19%. They have left all of these points on the floor. These, I know it's like woulda, coulda, shoulda. I get it. But I'm just saying, Broussard, this is not normal. They would have won game one, and last night would have been a blowout. Getting these shots. They're just not going down. Broussard, it's true.
That's right.
These shots are going to fall. Their shots are going to fall. So, and they'll fall next game. They'll fall in Brooklyn. I would be very nervous. It's like when there's too many sunny days in a row. Like, holy cow, there's going to be a massive thunderstorm coming. Broussard, I feel if you want to come to game five with me and Nick, buy your tickets because I don't think there's going to be a game seven. It's going to be raining down the
road. Hold on. Nick put that graphic together. Clearly, Nick, I like the shirt now, Brandon. No. There you go. Nick put that graphic together. I've never seen a graphic like that. Should have scored 35. What?
Yeah, should have.
That is incredible to me. The Nets, Nick has to.
Yes, it's back.
That's ridiculous. The Nets are playing good defense. Admit it, Nick. Admit it. The Nets are actually playing good defense. I'm not saying they're the Lakers or they're Utah on that end of the floor. But they are hustling and contesting shots. And here's what blew up your little spiel, Wilds. You showed Giannis shooting the three and it going over the top of the backboard.
Okay.
Is he going to get hot from three? Is that's
no.
the one that
no.
you're counting on to get hot from three?
He can't shoot anymore. He can't shoot anymore. He's out.
These are role players.
Those are P.J. Tucker shots now.
Yes. These aren't stars. These are role players who can get tight in the playoffs. Nick knows as well. Oh. Kyle Korver, one of the greatest shooters ever. He misses an open three because why? It's the finals now all of a sudden. This
but
is
I'm
big
so
time
Broussard.
Basketball. This isn't a Tuesday night in Utah in January. This is playoff basketball.
Right.
Guys,
but
get a little bit tighter.
But now I'm so confused. Oh, gosh. Help me, somebody. I think we got something wrong with my earpiece because I think I'm hearing, like, 5 minutes ago I thought I heard, but Joe Harris won't go 1-of-7. But now it's playoff basketball and role players get tight. But Kyle Korver, but Joe Harris. So wait, when the Nets miss open threes, it's just random dumb luck. When the Bucks do it, it's a sign that role players get tight. Intriguing. Here's a number for you. I don't need wild stats. The last time the Bucks had this many three games in a row shooting this bad from three, Joe Prunty was the interim head coach and Giannis had zero MVPs. It is literally the worst three-game shooting stretch they've had from three in more than 3 years. Game four, they are going to, I will set the over-under at 15.5 made threes and I will take the over. And one name that must be mentioned here is PJ Tucker.
because P.J. Tucker might have had the most impactful zero-point game I've ever seen. Kevin Durant is too good to hold down. All you can do is make him work. And P.J. Tucker, the reason the acquisition was so important was because P.J. had battled with KD all those years in the playoffs, Houston and Golden State, and he makes him work. And right now, with the refs letting him play, if P.J. State, what, you disagree? You disagree that P.J.
Yes,
Tucker had,
he
had the best plus minus of... Okay, well then you should go back and rewatch
it. Did P.J. Tucker... Did P.J. Tucker make Kevin Durant step out of bounds on the second time he touched the ball? Did P.J. Tucker make Durant throw it into the backcourt on the first possession of the game? Come on. Are you serious? P.J. Tucker got in Durant's face.
He helped him start 4 for 16.
Mm-hmm. He got in Durant's face because he wanted to save face. Because he was getting ripped, you heard him, by Shaq and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith for how he praised Durant after game two. Oh, he's unstoppable. He's the best player in the shooter in the game. You can't do anything with him. And
yeah,
all those
psychology.
Guys were like, how are
playing
you saying
games.
That during a series? How are you saying
getting
that?
In his head.
So P.J. had to save face
buddy.
And get in Durant's face. I'm glad he did it because I like P.J., but stop it. He's right. Kevin Durant's unstoppable.
You know why, Brandon?
He stopped himself.
You know, Brandon.
He's fine.
Brandon, you know why that jersey's on backwards?
Come on.
P.J. Tucker was all in his jersey the whole time. Got him all twisted around. Needed security to break him up.
He had a bad game.
P.J. Tucker, Brandon, your mic sounds funny because the jersey's covering it. We can't do.
He had a bad game.
Ridiculous, and we can't hear you.
Time now for stories to start your morning here on First Things First, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve. And we're talking the Clippers because the Clippers now find themselves in an awfully familiar spot. Down 0-2 in a series. This time, though, it's not Luka they have to stop, but Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell had 37 points last night. Remember, he had 45 in game one. In this one, though, Jazz led by 21 at one point. They, though, had to rally to win late, but they did, and now they take a 2-0 series lead. Brandon, your Clippers, can they rally from another 0-2 deficit?
Oh, Jenna, last series they took on the Dallas Mavericks, and that was a series that everyone thought the Clippers would win, but then they fall behind 0-2. And then they came back, they tied it up, then they went up 3-2, and then it went to game seven and they pulled it off, right? So here's the deal. They had less than a 20% chance of doing that. That was against the Dallas Mavericks that we all thought the Clippers were the better team and they should have won that series. This is the number one seed. Whether you like it or not, the Jazz are a good team. So it's gonna be hard for them to do it again. To me, the only chance they have is Paul George has to step up. Paul George had a good year, really good year. They balled out all year. That's why they're in this position. But now we're seeing him in the playoffs, and I'm not going out there and saying we're seeing playoff P or way off P, because that's not what we're seeing. But I'm seeing a conservative P. We need this guy, Nick, to, like, can I get an easy 30? Can I get that? Can I get one big game? Where's that moment where you're going to step up and say, you know what? Y'all are trying to take my superstar status. Y'all are trying to take my star card. I'm going to step up and drop 40. Like Kawhi Leonard, he willed you guys to victory in game six and game seven against the Mavs. Like, when are you going to stand up and do your part? And when I say do your part, I'm not talking about, you know, 10 rebounds, 20 points, 24 points, 25 points. We need to see 30 plus. Just an
game.
Easy 30 plus.
You
help
need a monster
brother
game.
That's what we need to see. And if he does that, then he's stamping, you know, that I am a superstar.
There have been 58 30-point performances in these playoffs by 21 different people. Paul George has zero of them. That ain't great. The Clippers have now played 9 playoff games so far this year. They are 4-5. That ain't great. 6 of those 9 playoff games, the other team's best guy has gone for at least 37 points. That really ain't great. And maybe the worst of it all for the Clippers and their chances of coming back from an 0-2 deficit again is it's the early part of the second round and Kawhi looks a little out of gas. Kawhi lost a jump ball to Bojan Bogdanovic at the end of the game last night. Kawhi played maybe the finest game of his career in Game 6 against the Mavs, and then he was great in Game 7. But I don't know. Kawhi's medical stuff is a bit of a black box, but there is something about his lower body that has just aged more than you would expect for a 29-year-old. Ty Lue wants to play him 45 minutes. He played Paul George the entirety of the second half last night. Kawhi played 38. And so it's just, they are asking a ton of Kawhi, and he can do it occasionally, but he can't do it night in, night out, which is why they need Paul George to have a monster game, which he doesn't seem able to do. The Clippers, once again, as they did throughout the regular season wilds, once it got close late, they had that great comeback to come all the way back from 20 down. They took a lead, and then their next eight possessions were disastrous. And then there's the Jazz side of things, and this is where I'm going to throw it to you. I doubted the Jazz all year as a championship contender because I thought they had everything except the superstar who can go get it on his own night in, night out. You've been trying to tell me they have that. His name's Donovan Mitchell. You're not appreciating what he's turned into.
Right.
Throughout these playoffs, he is proving me wrong and you right. I don't know if he can keep it up, but thus far they have the superstar. His name's Donovan.
See, here's the thing. I think he can keep it up because this isn't just one series. This has been 2 years this guy is good, and I'm calling him the Grand Canyon of basketball players, to the point where everyone knows he's good, and then when you get there and look at the Grand Canyon, you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize it was this beautiful. Yep, it is. That's why it's called the Grand Canyon. Can we show his stats from the last two playoffs? He's shooting. He's got more points than everybody. Oh, Damian Lillard, look at him bombing threes from 40 feet out. Guess what? Donovan is shooting better. Oh, the Joker, the big man is back. He's the MVP. Look at that little elbow jumper. Nope, Donovan is playing better than him. However good you think Donovan Mitchell is, he's better than that. I don't know if he can continue this streak and if he's going to win in L.A. I don't know. I do know that he's going to show up, though. I think there is a 0% chance that he lays an egg. Certainly, you know, I always say that you gotta steal a game on the road. So I could see the Clippers winning these two games, but I do not see the Clippers winning in Utah. So shout out. Those cardboard cutout fans are going to really need have their work cut out for them in L.A., Brandon.
Wilds, you know how he's the real deal and that this is sustainable. After he hits these big shots, look at his facial expression. He's not surprised.
Yeah, no big deal.
He's not walking back excited and said, look at his face. Yeah. This is the real deal. This is a dude that is playing with extreme confidence, and he's getting to his spots easily. And it seems like everywhere on the court is his spot. This dude is sensational, Nick.
That's right.
He has the same look on his face after he makes a huge shot as Pat Beverly has when he misses a wide open three. Yeah, I expected that to happen. Yep, that's about what we all expected.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
It's a great way to end the week, America.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.